Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Sam Pets Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of All the Small Games. My name's Andrew Levins, and with me, my beautiful co-host, John Valenzuela, here also.
I am looking particularly good today.
I'm glad I noticed.
Sure.
This is a podcast all about indie games, and we're going to be talking about a few of them today. I've been playing a remake of a 30-year-old game that was recently re-released.
30-year-old? Good
Cotton
Lord.
Reboot? Yeah. Cotton Reboot, older than some of our listeners, I'm sure. And John, what have you been playing?
I have put some time in this week on Minute of Islands and Mundawn. And cool. as a little teaser for the episode, I loved one of them, I didn't love the other. So
excellent.
Stick around and find out which is which.
The golden balance. Before we get into our reviews, we have some news. Do you want the super exciting news or the also super exciting news first, John?
I'll take the exciting news.
Okay, well, on Friday morning, I set my alarm for 3 a.m. I woke up and it was about 2:30 and I checked my phone and I was like, oh, it's 2:30. I woke up early. The reason I set an alarm was so I could pre-order a new play date because 3 a.m. Australian time on Friday morning was when they decided to drop the pre-order link. And so I woke up half an hour early and I was like, oh, I'll just go back to sleep and my alarm will surely wake me up. And then I woke up again a little bit later and I checked my phone and it was 3:07. Turns out I set an alarm for 3 p.m. Anyway, quickly ran to the website by holding my phone and entering it into my browser and managed to get the cutoff for the first 20,000 pre-orders of the playdate. They all sold out in 15 minutes. Well, but that means I'll be getting my playdate this year, which is super exciting. I also got the cover.
Hell yeah.
And what was great was stacks of listeners. Like, obviously, our Discord was ablaze with a handful of people who were trying to get it. There was a weird problem with international shipping. And so it kind of said that I guess because the servers were getting smashed, instead of just like being slow, it would give people messages saying that they couldn't ship to their address. So people were just like frantically refreshing. It was fine. I had the problem at first and then I just re-entered my address again and it was fine.
Frantically trying to move house.
But I had like multiple people write in. Someone DM'd me on Twitter. I should give a shout out properly. But yeah, someone that I've never heard from before, I just saw that there was like a message request notification from JL. And this is just a great message to get. Are you getting the same problem with Panic not shipping the playdate to New South Wales? And then in brackets, hey, huge fan of All the Small Games. And then in more brackets, and annoyed at playdate right now. so yeah, that thankfully JL was able to get one eventually. Josh, he's a game programmer at Big Ant Studios in Melbourne, originally from Sydney. Shouts to Josh.
I've heard of Big Ant.
You got a Big Ant, bruh. Fucking roasted.
Oh, The development of sports games, including Cricket 19, Rugby League Live 4, AFL Live, and Don Bradman Cricket 14.
Hell yeah. JL is also a member of the Each to Their Own YouTube channel, ETTO. Okay. Anyway, so I got a message from some from listeners, and we got an email from someone that managed to get a play date. This one comes from Ollie. Hey, John and Levins, big fan of the show. I just came across from the Filthy Casuals pod after Adam Knox mentioned you guys in one of their episodes. I'm finally up to date after smashing through your episodes, and I've been having a great time catching up on all your content and getting recommended even more games to chuck into the backlog. Anyway, as I write this, it's past 4 a.m. and I've got to be up at 6 a.m. so I'll get to the point. I'd first like to thank Levins, as I had my 3 a.m. alarm set a day early, and if it wasn't for you talking about your alarm on the pod last week, my stupid ass would have been waiting at 3 a.m. Thursday morning for nothing. All that aside, I managed to get my hands on a 2021 playdate, I think, and I was wondering how Levins' experience was getting one, and also if John ended up going in on one. Did you have any troubles with it? I struggled at first and kept getting the can't ship to your region error, but after 10 minutes of refreshing on my phone, I ended up getting my girlfriend's laptop out, and it worked on that straight away. Super excited to get my hands on it, and really keen to hear you guys' thoughts on this beauty when it comes out or when you get your hands on it. I like the last paragraph is where this email really shines. So sorry about the long-ass email. I don't think I even put this much effort into any school essays, so I understand if you don't get around to reading it. Ollie, it's been three at most paragraphs so far. It's not that long.
What kind of essays did you have to write at school, Ollie?
But if you've gotten this far, I'd like to say thanks for the hours of great content and great recommendations. As an electrician, you guys have helped me through many crawls through roofs and under floors, and I look forward to keeping up to date with the pod for however long you guys decide to do this for. Keep up the good work, and hoping you and your families are doing well and keeping safe through this unfortunate lockdown. Thanks and sorry from Ollie. Ollie, nothing to apologize for.
It's incredibly sweet, Ollie.
I think it was relatively problem free. I mean, obviously that is annoying. I think one of our listeners wasn't able to get in the 2021 window, because of the fuck up. But it's pretty impressive that they sold out like the first 20,000. So all the 2021 release window playdates sold out within 15 minutes. Playdate released, or Panic, the guys who were putting out the playdate. And have published games like Firewatch and Untitled Goose Game in the past. They have a podcast, and they haven't put out an episode for ages, years. But the same day that the Playdate launched, they released a 2-hour-long podcast episode, like really well produced, with interviews dating back like 6 years ago about the conception of the Playdate, how it came to be, and how much hard work it took from so many people to get it to launch. Really interesting. Listen if you are interested in hardware development. I feel like we hear there's lots of books about software development, but because video game hardware is so frequently, you know, attached to enormous companies who don't want to reveal their secrets, you don't really get much insight into, you know, the design process, the testing processes, the many, many processes that that make something go from concept to reality. Fascinating listen. Definitely recommend that podcast. And shouts to anyone that was able to order it on Friday morning. John, did you set an alarm?
I did not, Levins. I'm holding off on the playdate at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Just because my wife's maternity leave is about to run out.
Yep.
So just keeping an eye on them dollars for the moment, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Being responsible.
Yeah, well, I mean, as someone who has no income whatsoever, of course, I was the perfect market to buy a playdate. one thing I did learn from the podcast, listening to it, was that we know that you're getting 24 games when you buy the playdate. Of course, for anyone who doesn't know, playdate is an indie console that has two buttons, a D-pad, and a crank on the side. And most of the games utilize the crank. It's a kind of fun new way to play. It has a beautiful black and white 1-bit screen that's made with the same ink that Kindles use, I think. So it isn't backlit, but you can if there's light, you can play it really easily. And in fact, it's one of the few consoles that plays really well in like sunlight, whereas anything else would get glare. This is really good for sunlight. So pretty interesting. One of the guys who worked on the hardware has a background in Kindles and the weird like ink, the ink watch or whatever it was. I can't remember what the heck that was called. But the main thing I learned was that, yeah, the 24 games that you get at launch, we knew we were getting like one a week. But no matter when you buy, at this point anyway, they may change this once people complain. No matter when you buy, so say, John, I get mine in 2021, you get yours in 2022, you still, from the moment you turn on that play date, that's when the games start trickling in week by week.
So, right, so you won't catch up when you get your
exactly.
console.
So even
it's
if you
still
if,
interesting
at this point, if you buy your playdate 24 weeks after it originally releases, you'll still have to wait 12 weeks. Sorry, to get all 24 games.
Interesting,
which I think is cool because it means you don't get inundated with this insane library when you get the playdate first. But I don't know. I'm sure they may change that. But
everybody gets the same experience of owning a playdate.
Exactly, except maybe there'll be people that are like desperately trying to hide from spoilers of what games are being released when.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. I'm so excited for the playdate. I don't know, my expectations for the games themselves are like pretty tempered. I know they're just going to be fun little experiences, but for the actual console itself and like the UI and all of the, like the podcast really goes through the amount of insane things that they made from scratch, like, you know, the new UI for the system, like working with all existing things like Bluetooth and how hard difficult that is. But then they've also made the web browser based game developer kit that like even a dumb schmuck like me
could spend a small
amount of time. You know, I could, you can essentially learn how to make a really basic game and then upload it to your playdate and send your friends a code and they can play your shitty game and review it on their podcast.
Well, I guess that's an open call then for any other Playdate users or people who just want to hit that website and build a game to send us your efforts, and Levins will dive in.
Yeah, and I can't wait.
And see how it goes. I also want you to unleash Archie on that site and see what he can, like...
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
He'd definitely be cooking up good stuff.
Boomerang Foo too. Here we come.
Yeah.
So 2 hours after the pre-order link went live... for the playdate, the thing that John was most excited for last week, the Annapurna Interactive upcoming video game showcase, dropped.
Yes, John. or started streaming. Yep. I did not set an alarm for this. This was like 5 o'clock in the morning. Instead, I sauntered into work on Friday, and as Ollie mentioned in his email, everything's in lockdown at the moment. So, but I, because I live close to my office and working from home is not really viable because my house is baby, isn't entirely baby at the moment. I had the whole office to myself and I got to sit there in the morning and just spend some time taking in the Annapurna Interactive Showcase. And I got to say, I think like when we were doing the E3 showcases, you said, you know, Playdate was your favorite. I thought they were strong showcases, but watching this one, I was like, damn, this is by far the best showcase I've seen for E3 or just this year in general. So off the bat, and I'll jump around a bit in the showcase and just talk about the stuff that really interests me. But off the bat, there are two release dates that were locked in. One is Solar Ash is coming on October 26th. So that's the new one by the Hyperlight Drifter team.
That's right.
I think it's a console PlayStation exclusive, but coming to Steam as well. And then on the flip side, a Xbox console exclusive, and one that I've had my eye on for a while, The Artful Escape, which is like this crazy glam rock adventure through the universe.
It reminds me of the Neil Cicerega Brody Quest
video.
Do you know that one? It's like Adrian Brody walking around with a guitar, like... It's like him just going for a walk and then he walks under the ocean and then he comes back with a guitar and it has like this big goofy song. Well, everyone look up Brody Quest. It's maybe my favorite video on YouTube.
Ooh, big call. So we got two release dates locked in, which is always fun, especially since Artful Escape, I think, has been around for like 4 or 5 years now.
And it's a Game Pass, coming to Game Pass day one, September 9th.
Hell and yes. September
they announced 8th. Some of the voice cast as well, which is crazy. Like Jason Schwartzman's there, Mark Strong, Carl Weathers.
Lena Headey.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, huge. Big Hollywood voice cast.
And it's made in Australia.
Yeah. We got a really great comprehensive breakdown of Neon White, From Ben Esposito, and it looks fantastic. You know, it's such a crazy hybrid of game styles. You know, it's like a first person shooter mixed with a card game. It's very centered around speed running, but you know, there are all these like secrets that you can find in levels, and you can go back and redo levels once you've got more skills and stuff like that. It looks amazing.
I'm going to suck so much shit at it, but I can't wait to try it out.
Oh, of course. I think it's definitely one of those games where just the more you play, the better you become as you like, because it's all about looking for shortcuts in the levels.
And the levels themselves are quite short and you know, merit like replays after replay, so you can figure out the shortest way to get through it.
He demonstrated a level that he played. He played through twice. One was like took 22 seconds to finish, and the other, which was like absolute top of the line run, took 8 seconds. So yeah, it's definitely like a short blast of gameplay, and he broke down how the cards work as well, which is great. Like each card has a gun and a traversal usage, and you can kind of like switch back and forth, and cards have kind of multiple uses, and yeah, it looks incredible. There was a 4-minute look into Stray, the PlayStation exclusive game where you play as a cat in a sort of futuristic setting.
Man, the animation of that damn cat is perfect.
Oh, it's amazing. It looks so good. I'm so excited, especially since it's coming to PC. Because, as I said, PlayStation exclusive. That's where I'll be playing it. Skin Deep. I've seen this game around. It's been around for a while. They gave kind of a bit more of a look at it this time. In Skin Deep, you play, I believe it's an insurance adjuster who has to infiltrate a spaceship that's been taken over by pirates. And it looks like one of those games where it's like, it's all about kind of goofy, emergent gameplay. So they showed like, you know, you're trying to get rid of a pirate, your gun's out of bullets, but you see a button that opens an airlock. So you like throw your gun at the airlock button and the pirate gets sucked out into space and stuff like that. And, you know, you're trying to tempt a pirate to come over. So you like jump in the garbage and wind up all stinky, and then your stink clouds attract the pirate to come over to you and all this kind of stuff. Like, it just looks like it's going to be one of those really fun games where there's not a lot of constraints on your gameplay. It's whatever you can imagine can be done. One standout that I hadn't seen before was Storyteller.
Yeah, that one looks so much fun.
Yeah, so Storyteller is like you are given a kind of title and all these elements, you know, like characters and plot elements that you can put into a story, and you need to put together a story that fits the title. There's not necessarily one correct answer, especially it looks like once you get further into the game and you get more kind of plot elements and characters that you can add in, so you can kind of build the story that you want to build, provided it matches the title. That looks like a lot of fun. I don't know if they mentioned consoles. It looks like it'd be a great phone game or iPad game, just because the interactivity is like drag and drop sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We got a confirmation of an Outer Wilds expansion. So the Echoes of the Eye, I think it's called. Still a fair way off. It was really just one of the guys from the team that made Outer Wilds announcing it. But also they confirmed that we should be looking at a Switch port of it towards the end of the year. And they also announced a bunch of partnerships. The two that really stuck out for me was a partnership with NoCode, which is the team that made Observation, a really good kind of sci-fi thriller that I played earlier this year, and also a partnership called The Ivy Road, which is a collaboration between one of the guys that made The Stanley Parable and one of the women that made Gone Home.
Yeah, so here is where I agree with you, there were some great announcements, but then they spent way too long just like hanging out with people that hadn't actually done anything yet.
Yeah.
And just being like, hey, this is what we're gonna do, and like it was like it could have just been like 1 second, but it was 5 minutes of like those, that one in particular was like them kind of mucking around, pouring each other tea and goofing around. And like, if you're not familiar with who these guys are, it's kind of like they weren't talking really about game development. It was just about like what fun things could we do in the future. I don't know, maybe I'm being too cynical, but I hope that
On the flip side, I liked that Ivy Road one. Some of the other ones, admittedly, I was a bit like, okay, cool, you make games. Like, hey, you like skateboarding and you've got skateboarding in whatever game you're planning on making. That's great. But I don't know, the Ivy Road one for me, I found it particularly charming. I thought it was fun. Hey, that's just me. And I had the benefit of watching after the live stream, so I could kind of get a taste of those sections and then quickly flip through to whatever the next trailer or announcement was.
Oh, me too.
One little detail that I quite liked is, so in between each of the segments, it would like go to a kind of, there'd be an animation of like a globe spinning around and then focusing on the city that, you know, where the next game they announced was being developed. I believe the art style for those globe animations was taken from Kentucky Route Zero.
Oh, cool.
So that kind of like line drawing, like slightly dynamic line drawing, it was just a little detail that I was like, huh, I really like that. That's cool. So yeah, awesome showcase in my opinion. Loved so much of the stuff they showed. I was like, oh, hell yes, that's amazing.
Yeah, no, it was super fun. It was great. Lots of games I'm looking forward to, and also like a lot of games that Annapurna are publishing this year that they didn't even mention at all, which just kind of shows how confident they are in their future lineup. This is like them looking into the very far future as opposed to just this year.
It was funny watching the comments pop in the chat while going through this YouTube live stream, and so many people were like, 12 minutes? What about 12 minutes? 12 minutes? 12 minutes? It's like, dudes, that's out in less than a month. Like, mm-hmm. Of course, they're not going to talk about 12 minutes in this.
Yeah. So that is the Annapurna Interactive Showcase. One more bit of cool news just popped up this morning, and that is that a lot of indie game developers, without saying their names, these are the developers who gave us games like Disc Room, Minute, Sludge Life, Nuclear Throne, Genital Jousting, Bro Force, Ridiculous Fishing, High Hell, Heavy Bullets, Desktop Dungeons, Gorn, and Super Crate Box. They're partnering up with IM 8-Bit, and this morning released a trailer featuring indie game god Tim Schafer from Double Fine in a car playing this game. The game is it's a card game, a physical card game, a board game even, called Dust Biters. The game looks really cool. Art on the looks really fun.
So it's all about like post-apocalyptic convoy combat kind of game.
That's right. I was just as you were talking about Annapurna, I became the 555th backer of this project, and they are just shy of $1,000 left to go of their $35,000 Australian goal. So considering they launched this morning, I think it's pretty safe to say these guys are going to hit their target.
Hell yeah. I believe it's called
Dust Biters. It's on Kickstarter now.
Dust Biters. Looks good. Looks really fun.
Amazing lineage of people involved. I'm super duper excited. The main dude behind it is Jan Willem Nijman, best known for everything he did with Vlambeer. Last year gave us Disc Room and many other games that we've loved. And so he worked on Disc Room with Terry Velman, who is the illustrator he did a lot of the art for Sludge Life and Disc Room. So he's done all the art, and then there's a few other people involved too, including Robbie Fraser, who worked on Bro Force and Genital Jousting, some great Devolver games. But anyway, I'm super excited for physical games. I've been playing some pretty cool card games in lockdown recently. I've got to give a quick shout out to my friends over in Kyoto, Japan. I say friends, the friendship consists of me every few months begging if they'll ship me their new game from Kyoto to Sydney, and them being extremely pleasant and lovely and Japanese in their reply. Sashi and Sashi is the name of the game makers. I love them, their game so much. I've been playing a game of theirs called Remember Our Trip, which is like a tile placement game where you have to choose from tiles and then put them on your map. And there's also every player has their own map, but then in the middle is a central map, and that's where destinations actually are. And so you're forming memories by putting them on your map, but as they get locked in on the main map, you might be off from like where the landmarks So you're like basically recreating a trip to Kyoto or a trip to Singapore. It's really like it sounds complicated. It's really, once you start playing, it makes so much sense. It's very cool and very unique tile placement game. And this week we also started a game called Coffee Roasters, which is a game where you compete against other people to roast the best cup of coffee.
Dang. And, okay.
Look, spoiler. No spoilers, but at the moment I'm absolutely decking Archie at roasting coffee. But he did remember his trip to Kyoto better than I did.
You're more of a tea man, so that's a real interesting...
Whereas here, you're just smashing coffee, cups of coffee all day.
Yeah. Big into the Java, is Archie.
Yep.
Man, great news segment.
Amazing news segment, which means it's time to do another amazing segment in which we review a bunch of games. Before we do that, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, thanks a lot, sponsor. Let's get into some reviews. John, you got two games. I got one. It only makes sense that you do one, then I do one, then you do one again. So let's hit...
incredibly fair. So as always, I teased up the top. I loved one game this week. I didn't so much love another game this week. Which one do you want to hear, Levins? Do you want to go up? Do you want to go down for the first one?
I want to stay up. I'm on a high. I want to end the episode on a low note.
Just taper out gently. All right. If you've chosen high note, then here we go. So the game that I particularly enjoyed playing this week.
Can I guess? Is it Minute of Island?
No.
Shit. Okay.
It is Mundaun, spelt Mundaun. It is developed by a Swiss development company called Hidden Fields.
Oh, my God. Published... look at the artwork on this motherfucker. Everyone Google this now. This is crazy.
Yeah. So, funny, like, okay, you've skipped ahead, but the artwork is insane. All the textures in this game are drawn with pencil. Which gives it this really, like, really unique, really moody, kind of oppressive, scary look to it. Which makes sense, because this is a horror game. So, Mundaun is a first-person game. It's kind of adventure with some little survival-y elements to it. You play a young man who has received a letter from the priest in your old village telling you that your grandfather has died... but weirdly enough, going like, it was a peaceful death and we've buried him. There's no reason for you to come back to the town. Ha ha ha, cool, thanks, bye. In not so many words, obviously, it's a priest in a Swiss rural village. So, okay, thanks, bye is not probably in his vocabulary. But the general tone of the message is like, we're sad to say your grandpa has passed, but there's no reason for you to come back to the town. So, of course, you're like... no, I'm going back to the town. And the game starts with you kind of catching a bus up into the mountains, into your town. The first thing you do is go to your grandfather's old house, where I think the letter actually mentions there was a barn fire. Your grandfather has passed away. He's now peacefully buried, etc. You go to this barn, and after an encounter with a very strange, very creepy old man... You find out that, no, your grandfather hasn't been peacefully buried in the church graveyard. Your grandpa's charred corpse is still sitting in the barn. What the hell? So you then basically, you are off on an adventure of sorts to find out, okay, well, what the hell happened here? Why does it appear that my grandfather is cursed? Who is this creepy old man that sort of like shook my hand and left it looking all withered and fucked up, essentially? And it's just, I have been like, I was almost late to recording this episode just because I was like, I could probably fit in 2 more minutes of playing this game before I have to get my stuff set up. Like, oh crap, no, I gotta go now. I don't want to give too much away about the story, but it has this fantastic dreamlike quality that really builds into the horror of the game. Like, it's not... So far, over the course of playing for maybe 2 to 4 hours, there's been one jump scare. The rest has just been this, like, crazy oppressive atmosphere of this town. The people, like, there's not many people you meet in the town, but the people you do meet are all really weird and creepy. There is one point where you, like, you pick up a goat's head from a desecrated chapel, mm-hmm. and then the goat head starts talking to you, naturally. Thankfully, it's a very friendly goat head. As you kind of move through the game, there are enemies that you come across, but it's not really a game that's heavily focused on combat. It's more like some enemies you can kill, but doing so, like, at the, you know, the first kind of enemies you run into are these weird-looking straw men mm-hmm. who you can stab to death with a pitchfork, but stabbing, you know, killing one of them will almost destroy the pitchfork you're holding. So really, the idea is avoid combat as much as possible. Mm-hmm. It also has these...
So this is... I was worried that this is like a walking simulator type game, but you actually do shit in it?
There... Yes. Yes, Levins, you do shit in it. There is, like... Throughout the game, there are kind of three things you can level up. You can level up your ability to tolerate fear. You can level up your health. And you can level up your ability to handle a rifle. And you only get a rifle much later on in the game. Like, I only just picked up my rifle in the new area that I've arrived in. But there's definitely... Yes, it's not... There is a lot of walking involved, but there's a lot of, like, puzzle solving. There's a lot of, like, combat if you cannot avoid it. Like, it was great when I was, like, in a situation where I'd busted my pitchfork and had all these straw guys around me and discovered that I could set fire to piles of hay on the ground and then lure these guys to walk through the flaming piles, and they would burn to death after a while. Like, it wouldn't be immediate. And
all the fire and everything is based on hand-drawn imagery still?
Yeah. It's all rendered through this pencil stuff. Like, it's a 3D game, but all the textures they've put in the game have been done with pencil drawing, essentially.
And I know this is available everywhere. Are you playing this on the Switch, or...?
I'm playing it on Switch, yes.
Okay. How does it... I assume handheld. How does the imagery look on handheld?
Yeah, looks great.
Okay.
Still looks wonderful. I mean, obviously, like, aim to play it in low light if you can. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, like, vast swathes of the game take place at night and in dark settings. And if you're playing in a high light environment or in sunlight, obviously it washes the shit out of it, no matter how much you crank the gamma up. But yeah, I've just been enjoying the hell out of this game. It's been really, really pleasantly creepy to play. And they do all these, there are all these ways that they, like, how to put this, little details that they pepper into the environment that just add to the creepiness. Like, I just had an instance before where I was walking around a mountain lake after doing a kind of significant part of the game, and in the reflection of the lake was a giant image of the old man, obviously not reflecting anything. The shore on the opposite side of the lake is completely clear, but there's just this giant reflection of him, and it just gave such a fantastic kind of little shiver of, ooh, man, that's good and spooky. That's a good scare kind of thing.
Yeah, cool.
It's not gory or anything like that. It's just creepy and suspenseful. And yeah, I highly recommend playing this game if you like a scary game. If you hate scary things, avoid it, obviously. But I think if you enjoy scary games and you don't have a massive tolerance for it, this is a great game to play.
Yeah, unreal. Cool. So yeah, like I said earlier, it's available on everything. It's on Switch, PlayStation, Xbox, and PC.
Mm-hmm.
And dare I say Linux.
No, it does not appear to be Linuxed.
Sorry, guys.
Sorry, Linux.
But that's cool. It's great to hear that that it plays well. I feel like, you know, things where it's a very complicated graphical art style like that, not necessarily like high, I don't know, I feel like sometimes that can be lost on the Switch, and so it's good to hear that in handheld mode especially it looks good.
Yeah. So what do you got, Levins? Tell
Cotton
us.
Cotton Reboot, John. Let's talk shoot 'em ups, because we've talked about many shoot 'em ups in the past, but Cotton in 1991 was one of the pioneering shoot 'em ups, in that this is a game where you are, you know, just flying through the sky, firing at bullets nonstop. You just your thumb is just planted on the shoot button as you just fire at waves and waves of enemies who are flying at you and unleashing swathes of bullets in your direction. So Cotton originally started in 1991 on the 8X68000. It was a sharp computer that was only released in Japan in 1987. That's when it was launched. So this game came out for that originally on in arcades, and this eventually made itself to the TurboGrafx CD, the PlayStation, and the Neo Geo Pocket Color. But when it launched, it was on either arcade or X68000. This franchise, pioneered the shoot 'em up genre, in that instead of, you know, usually shoot 'em up games are like you're a plane and you're shooting at other planes, or you're an alien spaceship and you're shooting at other alien spaceships. In this game, you play as Cotton, who is a witch, and she is addicted to these lollies called Willow, like this candy called Willow, and she meets a fairy named Silk, and Silk's like, hey, I know where there's lots of willows, let's come eat some. But you have to just, you're basically on your broomstick, and you're just shooting magic at all these insanely creative, bonkers to look at monsters that have been beautifully animated with pixel art. And just like, there's so much chaos happening on the screen. You can play this game like your average shoot 'em up, where you are just like, you know, firing at everything you see, and collecting all the little power ups and things that fly through the sky that won't kill you. But there's a lot of strategy to the way you play this one, because every time you kill an enemy, they release a gem, and you can either like rush over to it and collect it, or you can fire your magic at it, and once it hits the jewel, it refracts and it will suddenly, you know, fly in two directions instead of one. And if you kill a bunch of enemies and the jewels just stay there, you can like basically fire in like tons of directions at once. And as you multiply your shots as they go through more jewels, you're constantly, one, making your shots more powerful and taking out enemies faster, but you're also, you have all these, because your secondary weapon is like this bomb that blasts out of your broomstick. At one point, it takes on the form of like a dragon's head, which is very sick. But the more you shoot certain colored jewels, the more those attacks get like level up. But if you shoot a jewel too much, John, it turns black. And then then it acts as like a barrier, and none of your shots get through. So that's when you have to, hopefully you've managed to shoot like through to the point of turning black, like multiple jewels in front of you. Then you swoop in and you collect them, and that's when you start chaining together. So you, on one hand, yes, you are chaining together attacks, but then you're also chaining together collecting the jewels at the right time. You can also enter like a rush mode where like it basically like it starts like, it basically puts a multiplier on all your shots, That you put through the jewels that take down enemies. There's seven levels that you make do to get through to the final game. Thankfully, in the regular version, when you die after three lives, which you will many, many times per level, you just hit continue and it does dock some points off your score. Obviously, if you want to get that high score, there is a lot of online rankings. And I imagine if you want to get near the top, you can't die even a single time. Whereas me on the last boss alone, I would say I had to do like six or seven continues, okay. Because there is so much shit flying at you on screen. And obviously this is my first time through the game. It looks so good. The music is bonkers. There is like a stupid story, which is also bonkers. And you know, you really, really want it to be bonkers. But what looks like a very like, you know, simple, silly shoot 'em up game, there is a lot of depth to the combat. And I imagine if you want to get through this game with the highest score imaginable, you really have to strategize how you are going to shoot the gems and when. And when do you sweep in and collect them? How do you dodge certain attacks? When do you use the bombs at the right time? When is the best time to hit your multiplier? This game was very, very fun. It was published... The remake has been published by In-In Games. In-In are an awesome publisher who basically do really high-budget remakes of... they're either high-budget or they cost a lot. I mean, they put the money into their remakes, but they expect a lot back.
Okay.
Because this game, I think, is like around the $50 mark a $30-year-old reboot. But... I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really, really fun. And I like playing a very mindless feeling shoot 'em up every now and then, and this absolutely gave it to me. It's on PlayStation 4, Nintendo Switch, and PC. In-In Games actually re-released another in the same week. They put another re-released game. I've talked about the Darius games in the past. They've released two collections of Darius games from like the arcades, like these amazing arcade ports where it's like super widescreen. So it's like you're actually playing on a thin strip that emulates how like this really, really long widescreen shoot 'em up used to be in Japanese arcades, which is really cool. Okay. So they get a hold of like classic like Taito arcade games from like the 80s and 90s, and then do like really great packages of them together. And they've just released Darius Burst EX Plus, Another Chronicle.
What a name.
And so this was a game that was originally on, I think on PlayStation. I can't remember what it was originally, but this has just come out too. I'm going to be playing this very soon. And they have yet another Darius collection, which is called...
Do you mean Darius, like D-A-R-I-U-S?
Yes.
Right.
I played one. I've got all the collections now. They're so good. There's one that is like the Mega Drive game, and I think it has one of the best soundtracks on any arcade game I've ever played. And damn. What's cool about the Darius games is that like you are like, you know, shooting your way through alien spaceships, but once you beat the first level... you have access to two levels and you have to choose from one of those two that you're going to go to. Then you beat that one and you have access to two levels. So there's actually like, there's so many different combination of paths you can take to get to the end of this game. A lot of replay value and a lot of different levels, and not just levels and cool graphics, but also very amazing music. So the next collection, which comes out later this year for PlayStation 4 and Switch is called G Darius HD. This is the original G Darius from 1997 remastered for the first time.
I assume these are all games based on lead singer of Hootie and the Blowfish, Darius Rucker.
Absolutely, who plays him?
Hell yeah!
He lets him cry. The alien spaceships that you're shooting.
One button hoots, the other button blowfishes.
In-In Games published some great stuff. If you like arcade titles, they've got so many of them. I've talked about a lot of the games on the podcast before, like the Turrican flashback games,
yes,
and Puzzle Bubble. I think they even published Wonder Boy, Asher, and Monster World recently. But a while ago, they published a game that is not necessarily a. They published CrossCode.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah. So they do a lot of like classic arcade stuff, but also like newer indie stuff too. Check it out in games, so iningames.com if you want to see some very sick arcade games that they've published. They have one coming out soon called Clockwork Aquario, which I'm really, really excited for, which is another 30-year-old game that they're like, the updated visuals for it are just gorgeous. Yeah.
Sweet. So that's Cotton Reboot. Big old thumb. Now on to a not so big old thumb, or the thumb's pointing in a different direction.
Ending the episode on a low note.
Hell yeah, let's get down, boy. Minute of Islands. So this is a game that I was really looking forward to in the lead up. Like, I'd seen trailers, it's got this fantastic illustrative style to it. The world that you're in looked really interesting. All these trailers showed, you know, like bits of footage of like this young girl in a yellow raincoat discovering a dead whale on a beach and looking at a giant crazy looking titan and stuff like that. But it was very kind of thin on details of what the actual gameplay was. So I was kind of hoping it was going to be like a, you know, an adventure style game, not necessarily a point and click, but still something that was based around like you find this item and use it to solve this puzzle kind of thing. So it's been out a while on Switch. That's what I was waiting for it to be on. Finally snapped it up, started playing it, and from the get-go, discovering that it's kind of like a very sort of uninspired platform adventure.
Mm-hmm.
was my first like, oh, okay, so this is what the game is. I just, you know, I run along a platform and then do a slight jump to get to a platform that's a little bit higher up, and then run along and I climb a ladder and I go back and I do this and I do that. Navigating the way around the world is tedious. Even running, it's just, it feels like there's so much sort of clambering up and down platforms just to suit the environment, not necessarily to feel like a good game. And a lot of instances they'll be like, oh, I can jump down from a platform here, or I can jump down from a platform here, but there's no actual difference in where I wind up. It's just two different places for me to jump down the platform. So from the get-go, I was like, okay, you know, all right, leaving aside moving around the world, let's get into the story of this game. Let's, you know, thinking, right, let's, maybe this will grab me. So in the game, you play as a young girl called Mo. Mo has been blessed or cursed, depending on how you look at it, with a device
with the called, name Mo.
Sure, with a device called the Omni Switch, which is a kind of like, it's sort of like a magic wand, essentially, that's used to control the technology that's been left behind by a race of giants, essentially. There are four of these giants left. They are four brothers. They all live underground separately on various islands, and their job is to turn these giant cranks that keep the power on, essentially. Now, the world you live in is a dying world. It's been taken over by a fungus that drives you insane and then kills you. So all the other inhabitants on this chain of islands left a long time ago. All that's left is you and various members of your family scattered across these islands who have remained there to essentially keep the power on, keep these titans or these giants doing their job. The game starts with you as Mo realizing that the power's off. And when you go and check out the giant is asleep or unconscious because the air filters that stop the fungus from poisoning the air around your island have stopped working and the air vents to the outside have closed. So you as Mo need to venture out into the world, get these air filters working again, and get the giant, clear the air so the vents can open and the giant can breathe again and it can start turning the crank and powering the island. Okay, so it's a very kind of convoluted story so far.
Sounds kind of fun so far.
It's kind of fun. It's very bleak. because a lot, like, it really does, despite the kind of very bright art, a lot of it is about, like, you are a young girl that has been saddled with this awfully large responsibility to keep things going, but is there any point in keeping things going? Because, you know, everyone's left this archipelago, why can't you leave as well? And it sort of feeds into the character somewhat. So I did the first set of islands where I had to find these three air, you know, find the three air filters, switch them back on using the Omni switch. My uncle was on the first island, and, you know, I had some interactions with him where he was like, he's worried about me because of the responsibility I have. And, you know, everyone else in this world wears a mask to stop the fungus from getting to them. But Mo, nope, she likes to think she's made of stronger stuff than that. So she just wades into this poisonous air, no problems. So finish that, go back underground to see the giant. The giant, like, I can't start the giant back up again because I need to go to sort of a power source, like, and figure out why the power source isn't working. Went and did that, started the giant up. I was like, okay, cool, that's one giant done. Let's move on to the second. Get to the second island, and it's the same thing. I wander around the island doing some not so great platforming, turn on a couple of air purifiers, have some interactions with my sister, which I'll get to in a minute. Once I've turned on the air purifiers, I go back underground. I solve the exact same problem of reconnecting this cardio thing. And at this point, it's kind of a puzzle platformer where I'm trying to work out where I need to get to and that kind of thing. Wake the giant back up and I'm done. Off I go to the next island. I started the third island, which my grandma is on. I got into, like, I've turned on the air purifier. My grandma, as a point of difference, charged me with delivering some little dolls to a cemetery to help her stop mourning her friends. Peppered throughout this are moments where you become overwhelmed by the fungus and you enter this kind of hallucination state where you have to, like, at the beginning, you kind of, you are given an order of three things. Like, they're maritime based things, so it's like a sand dollar, a jellyfish, and a starfish, and you need to search this little hallucination state to find these symbols in order, which then unlocks a music box which allows you to go back to the real world. I was starting on this third island and I got to one of these hallucination states and I was just like, I can't. I'm just going to put this down for the moment. Like, it's just the same thing over again. There's been nothing that's really flipped up the gameplay so far. That's when I was like, I'm going to play Mundawn, and got lost in Mundawn because I was finding it so much more interesting and so much more varied. I mentioned the interaction with the sister. And this is one of the things, is discovering that the character you're playing actually isn't a very pleasant person. Because when you're approaching the island with your sister, there's a narrator that's kind of talking about what Mo's thinking the whole time. And on the way to your sister's island, she's like,
don't gloss over that. How is it? Is it a good narrator or a bad narrator?
It's not a terrible narrator. It's sort of like a woman's voice. The narration isn't necessarily overdone. As you explore these islands, there are a lot of points where you kind of find, there's interactive points where you find stuff in the environment to talk about. So it might be like, you know, there's a chicken on the second island and you look at the chicken and the narrator will be like, Mo's sister kept chickens. She'd named all of them. You're pretty sure that one's called X, whatever it is. Like, just little points throughout. And those are interesting. They add a bit of depth. They add a bit of depth to the world. Anyway, on the way to your sister's island, the narrator's like, Mo is feeling kind of trepidatious because whenever she met up with her sister, the two of them would fight. And, you know, with such an important task to do, she didn't really want to fight with her sister, but she knew she had to get this done.
Mm-hmm.
You arrive on the island, you meet up with your sister. Your sister kind of starts by joking like, oh, it takes saving the world for you to come and visit me. Which, you know, we've all been in a situation where we're not feeling like having a joke, but someone makes a joke anyway. Doesn't really predispose you. But your sister then kind of goes out of her way to try and mend bridges with you. She's like, look, how about we go and eat some stew? Let's just catch up over some stew like old times. Oh, you can't do that because you need to save the world.
Oh, how you about hate I come- stew now?
Yeah, damn stew-hating characters. But then she's like, look, how about I come with you? I'll help you. I'll help you on this task.
I'll bring stew.
Yeah, I'll pack a thermos full of stew and we'll head off. But your character's like basically ignores her and goes, no, it'll just take longer if you come with me. You stay here. And finally the sister's like, look, if you leave me here, I won't be here by the time you come back. So you go off, you do your thing, you know, rescue the air filters, you switch the giant back on essentially. You come back and your sister is gone. And she has left a note on a table underneath a gemstone. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm like, this is going to be one of those really like heart-wrenching, bittersweet moments where I the sister lays out her feelings on the page for me and I feel emotionally torn apart. Let's get into this. So I wander across to interact with the letter and it goes, Mo didn't bother reading the letter. There's nothing that hadn't already been said before. Besides, the sister left this gemstone and that said more than the letter ever could. Now, one, I haven't yet gotten a deep enough understanding of these two relationships to gloss over this letter in that way. And two, there had been nothing in the game to indicate a significance of this gemstone. Like, if you're going to pull that off, maybe there was a memory I missed somewhere, or I hadn't looked at some interactive point that mentioned why this gemstone was important. But if you're going to hinge a major emotional moment of your plot around it, put it right in front of the player's face so they know what they're dealing with. That happened and I was just like, what? Like, already my previous interaction with the sister has left a bad taste in my mouth about this character. This just kind of leaves me going, well, now the game is actively stopping me from trying to feel emotionally connected to what's going on. Now, admittedly, I haven't finished the game. I'm only up to the third island and the third brother. There might be some huge emotional twist that happens in the third act of this game. I probably will go back to it once I've finished Mundawn and just clear it up real quick. But my inclination to do that just isn't there. Like, my experience with the game so far has been tedious gameplay coupled with a very bleak story, and I don't mind a bleak story, but you know, you kind of need some compelling gameplay to drive you through a bleak story. This doesn't have it, and it's already skipping over major emotional beats that would have embedded me even more in the story. I'm just having a real uphill time with this game, essentially. That I'm disappointed because the game was developed by Studio Fizbin. Studio Fizbin released this year Say No More, which I loved. And Say No More had a big emotional message in it, and it was dealt with really well. And even though the gameplay in that was simplistic as well, it was still done in a really dynamic and interesting way that, you know, I mean, Say No More is just a game where you literally just say no all the time. But the effect of you saying no is so kind of attention-grabbing and epic that every time you went to say no, you're like, fuck yeah, let's do this. Or fuck no, I guess, is more appropriate for that game. But this game is just a slog. And I'm lightly disappointed that the excitement I had for the game based off trailers and seeing these early looks at it hasn't carried through to the actual game itself.
Oh, that's a huge bummer. Oh, well.
Yeah. And on that note, Levens, goodbye.
This has been a happy and then sad episode of all the small games.
A real roller coaster of emotions, quite frankly.
I'm sorry the sister relationship wasn't explored to a satisfying level and that you'll never know the significance of the gemstone. That must keep you up at night.
I will look, if I finish the game and they reveal it, I'll update next week if I change my opinion on this game.
I think I owe it to... in Cotton reboot, She puts so much effort. Cotton is just like, I want to eat the fucking willows. And the fairy's like, no, 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 don't eat that willow. Let's collect all 7 willows and then you can eat them. Because the fairy is like, maybe we can trick this crazy witch into saving, you know, the galaxy. And then she can get her food. Anyway, you get the 7 willows. We never get to see her eat them, John.
Oh, oh. How do you, like, talk about a lack of catharsis? Jeez.
I'm out. I'm quitting games.
We'll pivot this podcast to something else.
If you'd like to hear us pivot this podcast into something else, you can over at patreon.com/allthesmallgames. We just last week released a new podcast called All the Other Things, in which we talk about TVs and TV shows and movies. And then later in the week, we released a second Patreon podcast, two in 1 week. Pretty crazy. This was a long episode all about one game, a classic game for our Patreon Game of the Month Club. We reviewed the game VVVVVV. Not just review, but we told the history of this game. And we went into our initial thoughts playing it when we first played it many years ago, through to what it was like replaying it now, with lots of reviews from our patrons too. So if reviewing a game with us sounds like something you would like to do, head on over to patreon.com/allthesmallgames. I'm going to give you a little snippet after this episode about where you can hear what our episode about VVVVVV sounds like, and maybe by the end of it you'll be enticed to head over to patreon.com/allthesmallgames. $5 a month gets you 2 bonus episodes a month, plus access to our very lovely Discord community where you can talk about video games, and especially small ones, non-stop. Maybe we can do fanfic. You can decide the significance of the gemstone in that game that John was just talking about between the two sisters.
Sure.
Let's do it together as a community. patreon.com/allthesmallgames. You can get in touch with us. allthesmallgames@gmail.com is our email address, and we are on Twitter at allthesmallgame, facebook.com/allthesmallgames. John can be found at 16tacos on Twitter and Instagram, and I am at levdog, levdawg. Come and say hello. We love to hear from you, especially if you're trying to pre-order a playdate at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Sure.
Any closing thoughts, John?
Look, another great ep in the bag, Levins. can't wait to do it again next week.
I didn't listen, as there is nothing you could say to. I can't remember. I couldn't remember what the quote from the letter was.
There is a gemstone on your desk now. Do not tell me the significance of it. You got any ideas? Do you have anything on your list for next week? You like got a teaser?
A couple of our listeners have insisted that I check out Ender Lilies.
Okay.
Which is a recent Metroidvania. So I've picked that up. I definitely want to give Eldest Souls a try. That's another recent, difficult action platformer kind of game that I want to check out. And there was a really sick game that just hit Game Pass that starts with an O. It's like Osmo.
Omno, yeah.
Yeah, I want to try and do that. Archie and I are also pretty close to the end of Chicory, so maybe that will be, by the time we talk again, we will have finished that.
Nice.
I've been playing a shitload of Duck Game with him as well, which has been fun.
Is he getting better?
No, he sucks at it, but he loves it so much. But he gets annoyed when I let him kill me, and he also gets annoyed when I kill him. So I don't know what he wants, man. Anyone, any ideas, email us, let me know. What does my damn son want from me? allthesmallgames@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See you guys.
Enjoy the snippet of our Patreon episode, and please consider supporting us. We really appreciate it. And welcome to a special episode of All the Small Games. This is our Game of the Month Club, episode number 3, and the game we're talking about is VVVVVV. My name is Andrew Levins, and guess what? Every one of those V's stands for Valenzuela. John Valenzuela, that is, my co-host.
What an introduction.
Unbelievable shit.
I was thinking on the way to record this, like, how often when we try to say the name of the game, we're going to need to either do it very slowly or be like, yeah, so in V.
Tasty Tiger Trio, whatever, has nothing on this.
I was like, let's just call it 6V, but then I'm like, nah, fuck it, let's just screw it up a bunch and see how many times.
Well, it does have an official website because this game was in its first inception, a free Flash game to play. And the website, which still exists, is http://thelettervsixtim.es.
Amazing.
So yeah, we are talking about VVVVVV today, a game created by Terry Kavanagh, an Irish video game designer. It was released in 2009, 2009 or 10. We'll work that. We've got a whole
2010.
We've got a whole podcast to work that out.
The Flash site you mentioned, I think, was released in 2010.
There you go.
So probably developed throughout 2009.
So we have every month we put in our Game of the Month channel in the Discord, two video games, and have everyone choose which of them. They're somewhat thematically themed, and so for this month I chose two brutally hard platformer games from 10 years ago, one of them being Super Meat Boy and the other one being VVVVVV, a game that I was very looking forward to playing a second time because when I last played it was 2013, but more on that later. VVV1 with flying colors, and so we're going to do an episode all about it right now, and at the end of the episode John has the honor of revealing the next two games for you to vote for in our Game of the Month channel. So let's talk about Terry Kavanagh. He was born in 1984. He's an Irish video game designer, now currently based in London. He studied mathematics in Trinity College in Dublin, and normally I wouldn't talk about that in a brief bio of a video game developer, but there is such a fucking maths element to VVVV and a lot of Terry's games, I think. His most famous games so far, there's like well over two dozen of them. Some of them are very small micro games, other of them are quite big, expansive games. But his most famous games are this one, of course, VVVV, Super Hexagon, which is still available on iOS, and it is an arcade game where you have to basically move. It's basically like a puzzle game where you're moving a lot. It's very quick, like a very fast puzzle arcade game where you have to move a hexagon and not getting trapped underneath the sides. And then last year he released, sorry, I just had lunch, I'm going to be burping curry for the next half hour.
Hell yeah.
Last year he released his biggest game yet, a roguelike deck building game called Dicey Dungeons. But Terry Kavanagh has put out a lot of games, and I'm going to read them all out to you now because some of them are insanely titled. So all the way back in 2008 and the next few games, these are all Microsoft Windows exclusive. So Zolgers with a ZX, Squish, Self-Destruct, Transport Stories, Never Opened, We Love Mind Control Rocket, Judith.
But wait, that was 2008. Out of those games, which, based on the title, would you want to play?
We Love Mind Control Rocket, obviously. Maybe Squish.
For me, it's Transport Stories.
Okay, all right. You are the story guy.
This is true.
We get it. You love riding. Pathways, Airplane Adventures. This one is... Are you ready? This is a Flash game he made in 2009. The Baron's Volcano Party.
Obvious winner there.
Das Puzzle Spielen. Nun Squad. Bullfist, Nanny Zero.
I think that's the best triple, I think, out of all of these. Nun Squad, Bullfist, and Nanny Zero. Hell yes.
Determinista.
Deterministica.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. Yep. Airplane Adventures 2, The Return. The Best Years of My Life. And Bullet Time. Then we have Don't Look Back, which has some fame. I know that's it's on iOS. And it was even on Ouya as well. But do you remember Don't Look Back? I've played this on my phone. It's like a kind of like throwback to old school adventure game where you're kind of like running through it's kind of a little bit like Limbo, I guess. Like a really, really primitive Limbo-like game.
Okay.
Or more like a Eternal Castle, like that style of retro platformer.
Sure, 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 yeah.
Very, very difficult to play on phone, but nowhere near as difficult as the game VVV, VVV, which John has finished on his phone twice, but more on that very soon.
Yes.
In 2010, we get Radio Silence, N-O-T-T-U-B, Sue Mouse, Kozachok, Going Forward. Okay, you ready for this one, John?
Go.
Ba 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 da la ha rr hak takim na ron o con bron ton o ron ton thun na ra vu ho ra nas ka wan tu hu hu render o nook on Adobe Flash and Ouya. then we have Memretix and Suashem. Then Phobia, Phobia, Phobia.
He just gave up at this point in time, didn't he?
I mean, we're
he?
About to talk about a game called VVV, VVV, so yeah.
Look, this is very true.
Red Sky Bridge, then at the end of 2010, a very busy, like three very busy years for games made by Terry. We have VVV, VVV. American Dream in 2011, another one that comes to Ouya as well. Heroes Adventure, Oichmaith. I mean, these could be Welsh, right?
Yeah, definitely.
What's
or
the Irish,
whatever
like,
the
Gaelic? Celtic?
Gaelic, yeah.
At a Distance, 2012 gives us Super Hexagon, and Chat Chat, Hexagon, Harmonilier, Griefer, Not Snake, Collapse, Fountain, Naya's Quest, Experiment 12, Maverick Bird, Moving Stories, we're now in 2015. Grab Them by the Eyes, all in caps. Copycat, Constellation Machine, Tiny Heist, Dicey Dungeons, Climb the Man Obby, and anyone
Climb the Giant Man Obby.
Sorry, Climb the Giant Man Obby. Anyone could be struck by lightning at any time. And those games are both games that he'd developed for Roblox.
Or in Roblox, because right. Roblox is like a game development platform now as well.
And finally, a game that will be coming out, TBA, for Microsoft Windows, Mac OS, and Linux is State Machine. So an extremely busy, prolific dude who just loves to make games. And whether or not, like, you know, he fleshes them out all the time, I think I love the spirit of, like, you know, this VVVVV has, like, a game jam quality to it. And a lot of my favorite indie games do, like, just, like, it's based around one simple idea. The game could be 10 minutes long, but he's fleshed it out to be a game that's, you know, around the couple hour mark, depending on how difficult you find the platforming. Yeah, like I said earlier, it came out in 2010. Well, actually earlier I said it came out in 2009, but John corrected me, 2010. And this has been released on Windows and Flash, Mac OS, Linux, Nintendo 3DS, which is where I first played it, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation Vita, iOS, which is where John first played it, Android, and Ouya. And on top of that, you can also play the game in so many different ways, including most recently the Nintendo Switch game, Game Builder Garage, where someone painstakingly recreated the entire game within Game Builder Garage.
Amazing.
Which is crazy. but yeah, so many ways to play this game, a lot of them free. And it is one of my favorite brutal platformers. And the fact that John has played it on a phone is just baffling to me twice.
Well, look, I did it one time, and then when it came time to play it for this, I was like, I could probably do it again.
Yeah.
And then about halfway through, I was like, why did I do this?
Yeah, I flew through this game until one, like, particular set of missions, and I was like, that's okay. Right, I fucking hate parts of this game. we'll get into that later.
So the
hear the rest of this episode at patreon.com/allthesmallgames.